So when I was living in the sorority house, and my roommate had a jar of peanut butter, and I felt that like compulsion that I wanted to have a little bit to the point where I couldn't stop. And I can't tell you how many times I finished her jar of peanut butter and I had to go buy another one to replace it. And I'm actually saying this out loud, like I'm not embarrassed because I know that someone else who is listening to this has felt that before, that uncontrollable feeling that you can't stop.
Hey, I'm Jackie Kirshen, obsessed with all things sustainable weight loss, mindful eating, transforming minds, and empowering you. I'm a registered dietitian and mom who's lost 65 pounds and grew a successful coaching business helping other women do the same. Join me to learn tried and true weight loss secrets while healing your relationship with food and your body. You'll get unfiltered real talk, support, and some tough Jackie love as we dive into motherhood, mindset shift, entrepreneurship, and mastering this crazy thing called life. Think of this as your one-stop shop for a coffee date with your best friend, guide, and mentor mixed with weight loss coaching. Tune in to be challenged, encouraged, and laugh as we change lives together. Welcome to the Mindful Nutritionist Show.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Mindful Nutritionist, the second episode, part two of my 65 pound weight loss journey. So if you did not listen to part one, I would love for you to go back and listen because I think it's really important. It sets the stage of how I lost the weight and how I figured it out. And today I want to go over part two, which is really how I learned to maintain and keep it off while living my best balanced life. And let me just tell you, it wasn't easy. So this episode is going to be talking about how I overcame and conquered my eating disorder and disordered eating and infertility and really started becoming a mindful eater and losing the weight permanently. So I'm really excited to share. I'm very open when it comes to this. And I just want to preface that if you are currently struggling with an eating disorder, have an active eating disorder, or feel like you need support when it comes to this, I really would love for you to seek out professional advice and support and therapy. And this is something that I will definitely talk about in the podcast and in this episode part two. But I do want to preface that I am not an eating disorder specialist. And I just have personal experience and have helped lots of people. But I wanted to also say that this can be triggering for some people. And I'm not going to get into the nitty gritty details of it, but I do talk about, how I have overcome things like body dysmorphia and my relationship with the scale and severe restriction and binging. And it is something that I know is not necessarily pleasant for everyone to listen to, but it's a big part of my journey because it's how I healed my relationship with food and it's how I help hundreds of women do the same. So if you want to stick around, I would love for you to stick around because I think it's so pivotal. And really, I'm going to share how to permanently lose the weight and keep it off and really be in that maintenance, which I feel like most of us struggle with. So if, again, you haven't listened to part one, I definitely would love for you to go back and listen to that. And let's dive into part two. And here we are, part two, which I wanted to do part two because, again, as I mentioned in the first episode, part one, that there are two distinct clear paths that I took on my weight loss journey. So all of it's a part of my journey, again, starting from the age of 9 years old and spanning until I was 29. And yes, 20 freaking years. So again, when I say lots of ups and downs, and it's a journey. So as I talked about kind of from the age of 9 to 19 of losing weight, I wanted to focus on, when I was roughly 20, when I had hit my weight loss goal and what that looked like when I overcame my eating disorder and infertility and becoming a dietitian. So, we ended off that, I lost the weight. I had the best few months of Italy and I came back to Emory. It was 2012. It was my junior year. And I remember coming back, and again, I had lost an extra 10 pounds. So a lot of my friends had seen me and seen my progression of losing my initial weight. But when they saw me, when I got back from Italy, that was like the biggest shock to a lot of people. And so I was, again, still at a healthy weight, but I'll definitely say that I had a runner's body because, again, I picked up running and I was running a lot, not in an unhealthy way. It was actually very healthy. Remember, I was training for my first half marathon, and I told myself if I could last 2 hours running, I can run a half marathon. And because I didn't have like a watch that calculated like the 13.1, so I just said, you know what, if I can run for 2 hours, I'm sure I can run 13.1 miles. So I got back to Emory, and that's when I started to get a lot of comments from people. It's so funny because my story started with people commenting how big and overweight and obese and fat and all the things. And now it was like, oh my God, Jackie, you're so skinny. How did you do it? You look amazing. And that started to really validate, oh my God, skinny equals healthy. Skinny equals good. I need to keep getting skinnier. So I really am the perfect storm. For those of you that know me personally, you know I'm a type A perfectionist. You know I'm intense. You know I'm an overachiever. Enneagram 3 over here. Any of my threes, hi, welcome to the club. And it is just really a perfect storm for an eating disorder because I was just so intense when it came to everything that I did. And it makes me sad because that's when I lost touch with my mindful eating. And that's when I was back at Emory, and I will say the environment had a big factor, right? I was surrounded by a lot of other girls who looked thin and dressed, you know, in their fancy designer stuff. And I just felt the need to keep up. So I became obsessed. And when I say obsessed, I literally didn't know how to stop losing weight. So I knew what worked. I knew cutting calories and running more intensely and restricting. And I just kept losing. And it wasn't as fast as during my weight loss journey because I obviously had a lot of weight to lose, but I was losing. So I went home for Thanksgiving, and I remember I still saw Corrine, and it makes me sad, but I have to just be honest with you guys. When I went to her, I used it as a way because I know I'd step on the scale and I was really focused on getting the lowest weight and my body fat percent. I didn't care about muscle. I didn't care about anything else. I was obsessed with the numbers and I kept wanting them to get smaller and smaller. And then I was 107 pounds, then I was 106 pounds, and then I was 16% body fat, then I was 11% body fat. And it just kept fueling my obsession, and to the point where it was the unhealthiest I had ever been. And so I had hit my lowest at my senior year. And before I get into that, I just want to say that my body was really retaliating. So that's when I started to experience binging, and I didn't know what was going on. And so this is when the disordered eating started to happen because, of course, I was cutting calories. I was running 6 to 10 miles a day. Like literally, if I did not hit 6.2, does anyone have, you know, like your Fitbit or some sort of tracker? And if I did not hit that 6.2 on my watch, I could not start my day, right? Everything was revolved around numbers. So whether it was my speed or how many miles or how many calories, to the point where I was counting 10 tomatoes or 10 carrots, the worst I feel like I got to was based off of the clock. It's so sad. And I hate saying this, but this is just what it was, that I was so obsessed with control and numbers that I wouldn't be able to eat at like 103. Like right now it's 1:23 p.m. I'd have to eat at 1:20 or 1:25. I don't know, guys. I was obsessed. I was so obsessed with control. So I started to notice that my body was kind of rebelling, and that was my way of continuing to control it. So I started to experience binges, and they weren't frequent. They were here and there, but it was to the point where, again, peanut butter was a very big thing for me, right? Because I couldn't really have it on Weight Watchers, too many points. And I felt very restrictive. And, you know, it was too many calories and it was fattening and all of the things I was telling myself in my head. So when I was living in the sorority house and my roommate had a jar of peanut butter and, you know, I felt that like compulsion that I wanted to have a little bit to the point where I couldn't stop. And I can't tell you how many times I finished her jar of peanut butter and I had to go buy another one to replace it. And I'm actually saying this out loud, like I'm not embarrassed because I know that someone else who is listening to this has felt that before, that uncontrollable feeling that you can't stop. And it's kind of like you're in this trance where you come out of it and then you're like, oh my God, it's all gone. All the cookies are gone. All the ice cream is gone. So I was getting skinnier, but I was getting unhealthier. So when I had those binges, of course, I would run more. Of course, I wouldn't eat. I wouldn't like it. Just it was this vicious cycle. So it came to a point where I'll never forget. I called my mom. It was April. And again, after, you know, months of being back home, like not even that long, like, you know, 3 months. And I called her bawling my eyes out. And I just remember finishing a binge and I called her and I was shaking and I was like, I don't know what's going on. Like something's wrong with me. And like, I'm getting a little teary up because it just was really scary for me. Right. Like I was, you know, 20 years old to 21, something like that. And I remember, you know, my poor mom also probably had no idea what the hell to say. Right. Like, what do you say? Especially when your child is just so freaked out and like feeling like there's something wrong. And I just remember her saying, okay, you know what? You're going to come home. You'll come home for spring break and we'll figure this out. So that's when I came home and I told my parents about, you know, what was going on. And we decided that, you know what, like, I think I need to be home. I think I need to get through the rest of, you know, Emory and just come home and, you know, really work on myself. So it obviously wasn't like the answer to everything. So that's when my weight started to fluctuate because I was binging and restricting and binging and restricting. And that was really hard for me to go from like really skinny to, and again, I wanted to be skinny. That was my goal, to putting on fat. And I felt it. I was pudgy. And that's when, again, I started to learn other mechanisms to restrict, right? When it came to taking laxatives and not eating all the time. And so this is when my eating disorder really started to begin and flare. So my senior year was, you know, the hardest year of my life because, again, it was this yo-yo. So I went up and down and up and down, and the binge episodes became so much more frequent. Instead of, you know, once every few weeks, it was happening every single week, if not multiple times a week. And so it's crazy, though, because I was the unhealthiest I had ever been. I was 97 pounds, and I couldn't even sleep at night without being in pain because when my knees would touch, I could feel my bones. So I used to have to sleep with a pillow in between my legs. And I remember calling my dad, just crying. I was defending my thesis and I put on a pair of pants. They were Zara, so not BCBG, they were Zara. And I just remember them being a zero or something like that and falling off of me. And I say that because I looked like a Holocaust survivor, and I was very scared to see my parents because I knew how thin I was, but I kept getting the validation and the reassurance from everyone else who saw me. And again, I'm 5 foot. So even when I was at my lowest, yes, I was very thin, but if you were a person that you didn't know what I looked like before, if you didn't see me 65, well, at that point, 75, 80 pounds heavier, you wouldn't think there was something wrong. You would just think I was really skinny. But so it's something that people who knew me, they knew something was wrong. So in the end, I did find some help at Emory, which didn't really help me. But that was my first part of me trying to heal my relationship with food by going to the psychology department and starting to work. I worked with a master's student who was writing her thesis in eating disorder. So it was kind of like a cheaper way for me to get therapy and going through exercises and started to learn about, you know, hunger and fullness. And it just, I wasn't in the place because I still wanted to be skinny, right? My goal was still to lose weight. But I was also terrified because of these binges and how out of control I felt. So I moved back home in 2013 and I decided to take a year off. And it's so interesting because I had decided that I wasn't going to become a doctor anymore. And I was going to become a dietitian because I fell in love with nutrition. I fell in love with weight loss. I had this like really deep connection to it, but I had a serious problem, obviously. So it was kind of my way of, I guess, masking it and trying to figure it out for myself. So, you know, my dad wasn't really excited that like my senior year, I changed course and I wasn't going to become a urologist and take over the practice, but he's very proud of me today, obviously. So I really started working on my relationship with food. And that's when I continued to work with Kareen, and really the opposite. Instead of weight loss, I started to focus on more healthily gaining weight and really healing my relationship with food. I also worked with an eating disorder therapist who was really, really incredible. And I was taking that gap year. I was doing a lot of research at SDSU before I applied to grad school, but I was really, really working on healing my relationship with food. So I didn't quite get it 100%, but I got to a point where I felt comfortable nourishing my body and bringing back and really breaking those habits of, you know, obsessed with the calories and, you know, the scale and all of those things. And again, it wasn't perfect. So I was studying to become a dietitian. And again, I had gotten to a point where I was okay, but I wasn't fully healed. And so it was hard because I was in grad school and I was teaching, you know, nutrition, and I was teaching, you know, how to become, you know, this expert. And I just felt like such a fraud.
Hey, San Diego foodies. Let me tell you about my latest obsession, Pita 22 in Carmel Valley. It's not your average Israeli restaurant. It's a flavor paradise tailored perfectly for your taste buds and health goals. Imagine Mediterranean dishes crafted from scratch with love and fresh, healthy ingredients, no sneaky artificial additives. From homemade pitas to labneh and even tomato sauce, there are no shortcuts taken here. And their menu is a dream for everyone. Vegetarian delights like house-made falafel and crispy cauliflower with zucchini, which is my absolute favorite. They also have family-friendly favorites like chicken schnitzel, which my daughter Olivia loves, and the softest homemade pita bread you'll ever taste. I've spent 11 summers in Israel, and trust me, this is the best Mediterranean food. And here's the best part. As a Mindful Nutritionist Show listener, when you head on over to Pita 22 and use the code MINDFUL, you'll get a free hummus. Yup, that is a special treat just for us podcast listeners. So whether you're in for a hearty grilled kebab or a delicious weekend breakfast like shakshuka, Pita 22 has got you covered. I'm a regular, the flavors never disappoint, and perfectly complement your wellness journey. So join me at Pita 22, indulge in fantastic flavors, and remember to use the code MINDFUL for that free hummus, and I can't wait to see you there.
So fast forward to, you know, really becoming a dietitian, right? I had the hardest internship, which is kind of like our residency, becoming a dietitian. I did that at the VA here in San Diego. And that's when I was under the most amount of pressure. And it wasn't really my disordered eating and restrictiveness, but I lost weight again because of how, I mean, if you are in healthcare, you just know, right? You have no time to eat, no time to drink. You're like constantly taking care of other people. I was seeing patient after patient I was in. And I was just, again, I would like survive off of like two protein bars the entire day. Cause again, I was still very intense in terms of like low sugar and low calorie. And I was still eating that way because all I knew was how to lose weight. but the stress and my lifestyle is where it really impacted. So again, I kind of dropped weight again. And this is when I actually met Todd. Well, I didn't meet Todd. Todd and I met a long time ago. Maybe we'll do an episode on how Todd and I started dating. But Todd and I started, my husband now, we started dating. And that's really when everything got put to the test, because I had someone else in my life and it was going in the trajectory that we were going to spend our lives together. And so I really had to be honest and vulnerable with him. And that was the first time I had told anyone else about, you know, what I was struggling with. And I'll never forget. And this is the part of, you know, my eating disorder and disordered eating that, you know, probably people can relate, that the way you act can be so volatile. You can be so high at one point, then so low at another. And I'll never forget, we hosted people and I still was always on the defense of like my food, right? I still had very low calorie, but high volume, and I was still very weight loss mode. So when people would comment on my food, it would really throw me into a spiral because I had to defend it, right? So it was something that Todd, I remember I was like serving myself some fruit when we had some guests over, and he said to me, and benignly, like, you know, are you sure you want to eat that much? Isn't that going to give you a stomach ache? Like, he genuinely wanted to like make sure I didn't get sick, but boy, did I blow up. I mean, can any of my ladies resonate with like one of like a comment from their like spouse or partner or a guy being like, should you really eat that? Like in front of people. And so that's when I had to have like the first conversation with him. I like obviously like blew up. I was so upset. I was so embarrassed. And I had to, like, he didn't understand. He was probably like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what did I do? But I had to explain to him how I have a very damaged relationship with food and I'm working on it. And so that was the first time that I had to be really honest with him. So I think that was a big push for me. And so I made it through my internship, and that is when Todd and I, we got married, and I was still on the pill at the time. And so I came off the pill because I knew that we were, you know, wanting to start a family. Todd's 10 years older than me, and I knew in my gut, I knew I was going to have trouble because of my history of weight loss and extreme dieting. And it just was there was no denying that. So after about 6 months of being off the pill, I did not get my period. So I was like, what is the point of trying if I can't even ovulate? And so that's when I started my fertility journey and to really just kickstart. And that was really hard. So COVID hit, and, you know, that was hard in itself. And then starting this journey, just to get my period back. So I'll never forget, I was talking to a family friend who is an IVF specialist, and I was telling him about what's going on and kind of, you know, asking like, what should I do? And he said, well, you know what? He's Israeli. So in his Israeli accent, yeah, you know, Jackie, well, you know, you need to gain 20 pounds. And I mean, can you imagine my jaw just like, what? And he's just like, you know what? I know you're very thin, and you don't have enough body fat percent. And that was a big moment for me when I realized it was kind of like when I was told that I needed to lose the weight because I was pre-diabetic and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And it was like this big aha, that like scarcity of disease. This was a big aha for me because I wanted to become a mom. And that was like the most important thing to me. So that is when I committed to reducing my exercise and really nourishing my body, because I knew how to do it, right? I was a dietitian. I was a bariatric dietitian at the time. So I was really preparing people, you know, helping them lose weight and preparing them for surgery. And it was just so funny because, I guess not funny, but like I was doing the opposite, where I was trying to gain about 20 pounds so I could kickstart my fertility and my ovulation. So I'll never forget, I gained healthily a few pounds. But this is where it really shows that the hold of disordered eating still had over me. I went to the doctor and I'll never forget, you know, I was, you know, still very low in my weight and I gained about, you know, 5 pounds. And when I saw that number, oh my goodness, I am not kidding. For 2 weeks, I was a wreck. And it was so hard because again, like that was the whole point, right? I was trying to put on weight and people had said how, you know, much healthier I looked and which was hard to hear because it was just like, well, did I not look healthy before? And it was really, really tough and it had such a hold over me. And I just realized I have to really heal my relationship with food if I want to become a mom. So I started, unfortunately, IVF because I had to. I wasn't getting my period, all of the medications and stimulation and all of the things. And it just came down to IVF. So I'm very, very fortunate. Part of all of this, I also just realized I never mentioned I have PCOS as well. That's when I was diagnosed. And it kind of made sense because I was like, oh, wow, like no wonder why I struggled with my weight my entire life. So I guess the good news that came out of that was that I found out I was, I had PCOS and it really, that's a whole nother story when my doctor called me like skinny PCOS. And I can get into that another time because that's just like totally, I hated that. That's how I was labeled. But it made sense, right? So I struggled with infertility, I think mainly not just because of the PCOS, but because of how severely underweight I was and how I essentially destroyed my menstrual cycle. And I had literally never had a period from the age of 16 up until they were, you know, stimulating it through medication at the age of 28, 29. So, it was just something that, again, I said, you know what, I'm grateful that I have, you know, the resources and that we're able to go through IVF, but it was really hard on me because I felt like I did it to myself. I felt like I put myself in this position and a part of me was like, I wish I didn't want to be skinny so badly. So I like when I wanted to become a mom, that I could become a mom, but I know that that thinking is never going to help me going back and, you know, wishing, and it just, it is what it is. But at least saying this out loud, I hope that if there's anyone listening who is relating to any of this and struggling with any of this, to know that being skinny is not the end all be all. And your health is just so much more than a number on the scale. And it took me a very long time to understand that. So, you know, long story short, we went through IVF and I was very fortunate. I ended up with 3 healthy embryos. I had 9, but 6 of them were not euploids, which means that, you know, they had an extra chromosome of this or that, or, you know, just something. So we had 3 healthy girls and one of them is Olivia. So to me, when I went through IVF and got pregnant with Olivia, everything shifted because I knew that I did not want to pass down everything that I went through onto Olivia. So that is when there was a big shift in my journey. Not only did I leave my bariatric practice, though I was working, it was a stable job, but I decided, you know, COVID hit and I knew I was going to be going through IVF, and which is pretty much a full-time job. And I always wanted to start my own private practice and really focus on sustainable weight loss because I had really been working on healing my relationship with food and helping other women do the same. And so it was something that kind of naturally happened. And that was my commitment to myself. So when I had Olivia, everything shifted. And especially, I think the pregnancy also, I was nourishing my body and I was using even just my experience of building my practice and starting to support other people, really being like, I need to practice what I preach. So in 2022, January, I had Olivia. And it, again, everything, it's like it clicked. You know, I had finally really healed my relationship with food as I was practicing more mindful eating. And when I could say confidently, you know, 2021, 2022 is when I really, 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 and that's when I became the mindful nutritionist, right? So to me, during my pregnancy and then postpartum, it was a test to myself to practice what I knew best, how to sustainably lose weight while eating the foods you love. It's how I lost the weight, but I lost myself along the way. So it was a vow to myself to show Olivia how you can nourish your body and connect to your internal cues. And I was so grateful that I had a beautiful experience with breastfeeding. And I was able, I don't know how much weight I gained during my pregnancy. I have realized that the scale is still something that is very sensitive to me. So I don't use the scale. And so I never looked at it. And I asked my doctor just to make sure that she never like mentioned it to me. But so I don't know how much weight I gained, but I was able to lose all of it because I fit back into my clothes and I got back into running. And that's when really my practice took off because I was truly living as the mindful nutritionist and I was truly practicing mindful eating. So it's really, really insane to come out on the other side. I do want to mention that, you know, I think we all have to go through highs and lows. So clearly you can tell I've been through, you know, some highs of, you know, at least starting my practice and being successful, losing weight, but also the lows of, you know, really hitting rock bottom with my eating disorder, infertility. And a part of that is also, I did get pregnant naturally in 2023, which was such a shock because I think after having Olivia and going through IVF, it just kind of like kickstarted my body and I had really been at a healthy weight and I'm practicing what I preach. But unfortunately, at 14 weeks, we lost the pregnancy due to a crania where the baby's, the skull, the head didn't fuse fully together. And so that was a really big low for me, but practicing my mindful eating practices and my mindset, that is really when it put to the test. And I was just grateful that I got pregnant again. And to get through that really was a true testament to all of the struggles, the 20 years that I've been through. So it's crazy because today I've probably announced it. So I'm excited to share. At the time of this recording, I am 13 weeks pregnant, again, naturally. And I feel like I can say it and, you know, be excited because we obviously went through such a hardship of losing that second pregnancy. So making it past that 10 weeks and now me being 13 weeks. But again, just being so grateful that I went through so much struggle to get to this point where I naturally got pregnant despite the PCOS, despite having gone through so much with amenorrhea and losing my period and the weight loss and all of the things. And now today, I can confidently tell you, I am a mindful eater. And it took me so long to get here, but I am a successful weight loss coach and dietitian, business owner, and just compassionate friend and loving mother. And it took me so long to get here. And I am just so grateful to have you along my journey and the experience. And my goal is to help you have the same freedom and confidence in your body and energy and to get you feeling that way every single day through mindful eating because it took me very, very long to get here and I know I can help you with that too. So I wanted to share the ups and downs, but the number one thing that got me through everything has been my support system. And mindful eating saved my life, not once, but twice, right? It saved me in weight loss and it saved me from my eating disorder. But also the constant thing was my support system and really healing the inside out, focusing on my mindset. So 2024, oh my goodness, I can't believe we're here. I'm starting a freaking podcast. I'm sharing everything. So there's my full story. And I am so excited to bring incredible guests and share with you the truth when it comes to sustainable weight loss, when it comes to healing your relationship with food, when it comes to figuring out what foods work best for you and your body, when it comes to living in a body you truly love. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm so excited for our next episode and future episodes with incredible guests. And if any of this resonated with you, please, I would love for you to share what touched your heart. And next week, we will have another powerful episode, but with a guest. And I hope you enjoyed part one and part two of my journey. And I will see you next week. Well, there you go. My journey wrapped up in two episodes. I mean, it's hard, you know, to share these ups and downs and be vulnerable. But I also know that me bottling it in and not sharing it is doing a disservice. So if any part of this episode hit a nerve, hit home for you, I want you to know that you're not alone. And I would love for you to share this episode with a friend who is struggling, or, you know, definitely tag me on Instagram and let me know a part of this episode that really hit home for you. And I hope at least sharing these highs and lows can paint the picture for you that it is possible for you. If you are struggling, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And I'm just so excited to have you here. And I'm glad I started again, like I said, with these, you know, part one and part two of my journey. And now let's get into the fun, right? Now let's get into the fun episodes with incredible guests and people who you probably know and love, and also people who you don't know. So I'm really excited. So if you would leave a 5-star rating and review, I mean, I cannot tell you how much that means the world to me. I read every single one. I mean, every time I always am like they loved it. And it means so much to me, because not only does it help me bring on other incredible guests and share all of our stories, but it helps me touch and heal someone else, right? And help someone else really be the best version of themselves. And that's my goal for this podcast. So again, tag me on Instagram. I love resharing. I love knowing what you loved about this, and stay tuned for next week with an incredible guest. I cannot wait to dive into all of the fun things of mindful eating, and I will see you then.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed that conversation just as much as I did. As always, anything mentioned, any links, any notes will all be linked on our website, mindfulnutritionistshow.com. Just head on over there to take a look. And if you haven't connected with me yet personally, I would love to meet you. Come and find me on Instagram at the.mindful.nutritionist, and please DM me. Let me know if you listened to the episode and what you thought. I seriously love hearing from you. Or come to the Mindful Nutritionist Show Facebook page and say hi. I would love to connect with you there. Thanks so much for being here and for being so amazing. I can't wait to chat next time.